and forgives. And we as a human being, we get and forget. But I, to take a step ahead towards my Lord, I want to be like him. I want to give and forgive.
But, you know, sometimes
and at the same time, I have to, forget. Because those hurts, that being, resentful, all that feeling,
I know.
That's not going to make any difference to the other person. If I could guide the other party, it would be better, directly or indirectly. But if I could make a distance, that will be better for my mental and psychological health.
I know.
But at the same time, I think keeping distance is the best thing. And this does not ignore the fact that good people do not exist. I should accompany myself with the good people around. You should make a distance with that person. I'm not against making a distance. But I'm against the fact you should not lose your good value, your good
character. Yeah, this is very important.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Yes, there are different strategies just to, for the kind people to stay kind and for even those kind people to ignore the wrong people in their lives. There are different strategies for different people. Let's talk about that more.
Yeah. And I'm not such a good person as our sisters up here.
Guys, she's not saying the truth about herself. She's so kind-hearted.
Thank you.
But then you're she's looking me. From the idealistic point of view.
Yeah. You know, I'm not like that. Okay, I can't forgive or forget you. No, I cannot forget. But at the same time, you know, I try to keep my distance with these kind of people and keep my values, you know. Their badness and their evilness shouldn't affect your goodness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is
of
the
course,
most
there's
important
a fact
thing
in here.
Here.
We should notice that. After a storm, you cannot pretend like you're untouched.
Yeah.
Of course, your character and personality is going to change. But into the better, I suppose, not into the worse.
I think Imam Hussein al-Islam said, do not oppress someone who is defenseless. So sometimes you are powerful to take revenge. So, you know, teach someone a lesson about the hurt they created you. And but at the same time, you should realize, is the person defenseless right now?
The story of Hur shows it all. Because he was the one who didn't let them get away from Karbala. So what happened is that when he was back, he himself was so ashamed of what he has done.
Right.
But then Imam Hussein actually with kindness embraced him.
Right. I think the entire life of Imams has lessons at each and every stage. And when we are like, you know, we read about those stories. And I think... You know, when we look at the story of Lady Zainab Salaamu Alaiha, I often do say to myself, all right, I was not that oppressed. I was not that hurt. I was not hurt to this extent. And what she did in all the time, she did not let her night prayers go. Wish Imam Hussein al-Islam on her last goodbye says to her, remember me in your night prayers.
So just as we were talking about kindness and about kind people and wishing other people some harms, other people who have done you harms, the same harm. I just always say that there is two sides for this story. The one side who is oppressed and the other side who is the oppressor.
Right.
I guess both sides have to think about what they do. The first one, that is the oppressor, I guess they have to just change because life is not going to end up like this. There would be a time when you are going to be in the wick position and then someone would come above you who's more superior and more powerful than you. If we talk about Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Hur, we know that when he came back, he was totally regretful of what he has done.
Right.
So you should feel it from the depth of your heart that, okay, I regret what I have done.
Sometimes,
I am ashamed of what I have done, not just accept it and say it with honor and being so proud of what you have done.
Right. Sometimes with your character of kindness and forgiveness, you can just, your practical behavior could change the way people think.
Exactly. Yeah, it happens.
You could lead by an
example. It happens, actually, but not to all people because some people are just blind, I suppose. I guess these people as well have to create some boundaries between them and between the oppressors.
I think, again, sometimes when you make that distance, it would help, because when you make yourself available all the time, your value is not known.
Exactly. Yeah.
Distance is very necessary sometimes, but again, I would say if someone is hurting you for a particular kindness of yours, it should not take away that kindness from you. It should take away that person from you.
Yeah. So just to tell the gist, I would say that if you are kind, stay kind. And trust me, nothing in this world would remain unanswered. There's always a reaction for whatever that you have done, whether it be good or bad. So if you're bad, try to just change it. I mean, if you have bad behaviors, try just to change it. And if you are full of goodness, try to just keep it the way it is and know the value of it. And thank you for being with us until another session. I bid you farewell and leave you to God's never sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabb. Let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Farewell, O Messenger of Mercy. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, Salam and heartfelt condolences to you all on a very poignant occasion. Today is the 28th of Safar, the day the Almighty's last and greatest messenger to mankind left the mortal world. It is a day of double grief, since on this very day, exactly 39 years after his passing away, his elder grandson, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, was martyred through a fatal dose of poison. We present you a feature on Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, whose universal mission, Islam, was prophesied by all previous prophets, including Moses, Jesus, and all others. Please stay with us. The 28th of Safar is a day of profound grief. It is the day on which the Messenger of Mercy left the mortal world, plunging his blessed family, the Ahlul Bayt, in grief. In fact, he was forced to leave it, since, according to some accounts, he was fatally poisoned and thus achieved immortal martyrdom in the year 11 AH. Some say the dirty work was done by the Israelites, who have a sordid record of ridiculing the prophets of God and killing many of them, their chief victims being Zechariah and John the Baptist, or Yahya, though they narrowly missed murdering the virgin-born prophet, Jesus, peace upon him, who was miraculously lifted to the heavens by God, while the traitor, Judas Iscariot, was crucified instead. Whatever the cause of the passing away of the Prophet of Islam at the age of 63, the end of his 23-year universal mission, during which he braved the intricate plots and armed attacks of the Arabs and the Israelites, often operating in tandem, opened the floodgates of suffering on his immediate family, which were to climax 50 years later in history's most heart-rending tragedy at Karbala, where his younger grandson, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, was brutally martyred, along with his sons, brothers, nephews, cousins, and a small group of companions. Except for a few loyal companions of the Prophet, there was no one to console his immaculate daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, and her children in this hour of grief. His dear cousin, ward, and son-in-law, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, who had been the first to bear testimony to his divine mission and who thereafter stood beside him through every thick and thin, including fierce battles during which he single-handedly defended, since most of the new Muslims were fleet-footed on such occasions, was left virtually alone to conduct the Prophet's last rites. According to historians, the absentees had matters of expediency to tend to, rather than attending the funeral, since the political power of the first ever Islamic state was now up for grabs. It is not our intention to delve into the scandalous event of Saqifa Bani Sa'id, which remains to this day as the greatest ever discord and an open violation of both the explicit words of the Prophet of Islam and God's commandments concerning the crucial issue of velayat, or divinely decreed authority for proper guidance of the Ummah. Neither do we wish to go into details of the infamous incident of Qissatul Qirtas, or account of the paper and ink pot, which was denied to the Prophet during the last days of his life by a group of companions for their fear that he might write the will to formally confirm the leadership after him of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and thus called him delirious, despite the fact that God Almighty says in Ayahs 2-5 of Surah Najm of the Noble Quran, "Your companion does not err, nor does he go astray, neither does he speak out of own desire. It is naught but revelation that is revealed to him, taught him by the Lord of mighty power." To quote the famous Sunni compendium of Hadith, Sahih Bukhari, "The Messenger of God said, 'Bring a paper to me so that I write for you a document after which you will not go astray.' On this, some persons started sharp arguments, although quarreling near the Prophet was against etiquette. Some said, 'The Prophet is in a delirium,' to which the Prophet replied, 'Leave me to my scruples. I am fine in whatever condition I am than what you are calling me.'" Bukhari also mentions the name of the person who denied paper and ink pot for making the decisive will, And after blaspheming the Prophet, as Derilius said, "The Book of Allah is sufficient for us." It is strange how this person made such a big claim when it is clear that before becoming Muslim, he and others like him had spent the greater part of their life in idolatry and in cardinal sins, in addition to vehemently opposing the Prophet and his monotheistic message. Nonetheless, the Prophet, as the emissary of God, did not leave the Ummah in darkness. As the messenger of mercy, he had made clear preparations for his departure by providing broad guidelines for Muslims. As a matter of fact, the Prophet was fully prepared for his eventual journey to the ethereal heavens and made him necessary arrangements for the continuation of divine guidance after him. For this reason, he had announced months earlier of his farewell Hajj pilgrimage to God's symbolic house on earth, the Holy Kaaba in Mecca. During this epic assembly, when as many 140,000 Muslims joined him from all parts of Arabia, he told the congregation in explicit and unambiguous words at Jabal al-Rahma, or Mount Mercy, on the plain of Arafat, on the 9th of Dhul-Hajjah, "I am leaving behind among you the thaghalain, that is the two invaluable things, the Book of God, that is the Noble Quran, and my progeny the Ahlul Bayt. Hold fast to them and you will never go astray, for the two will never separate from each other, even when they return to me at the fountain of Kauthar on the Day of Judgment." 9 days later, on the 18th of Dhul-Hajjah that year, exactly 2 months and 10 days before his passing away, the Prophet was even more explicit in spelling the formula of faith and the protection against going astray. On the express commandment of God Almighty, as is evident by verse 67 of Surah Ma'idah, he halted the Hajj caravan in the wilderness at a pond, or Qadir, at a place called Khum, near Jaffa. Here, in front of the huge gathering, after holding the Muslims witness to his conveying of the tenets of Islam and his own excellence over them, he lifted his cousin and son-in-law to proclaim those immortal words: "For whomsoever I am master, this Ali is his master." Thus, in view of these undeniable facts, the poignant event of Safar 28 that dealt a grievous blow to the heart of the apple of his eyes, that is, his only surviving daughter, Hazrat Fatimah Zahra, peace upon her, his departure from the world was not unexpected. The Prophet breathed his last with his immediate family, including his two little grandsons, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, peace upon them, gathered around him. In the words of Imam Ali, peace upon him, "When the Prophet passed away, his head was on my chest, and his last breath blew over my palms, and I passed it over my face. I performed his funeral ablution. May Allah bless him and his progeny. And the angels helped me. The house and the courtyard were full of angels. One party of them was descending and the other was ascending. My ears continually caught their humming voice as they invoked Allah's blessings on him, till we laid him to rest in his grave. Thus, who can have greater rights with him than I, during his life or after his departure. Time also does not allow us to do justice to the universal message of Islam that was entrusted by God for the salvation of mankind to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The fact that despite the passing of 14 centuries, the teachings of Islam remain as fresh as they were at the time of revelation is ample proof of the immortal mission of the last and greatest prophet, whose mission was predicted by all previous messengers of God. For instance, in Ayah 18 of chapter 18 of the book of Deuteronomy of Torah, God tells Prophet Moses, "I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren and will put my words into his mouth. And he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him." In the Gospel of St. John, verse 16 of chapter 14, we read the prediction of Prophet Jesus to his disciples regarding the last prophet. "Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you." Similar predictions are found in the Zoroastrian, Hindu, Buddhist, Jain, and other scriptures. Ayah 33 of Surah Tawbah clearly states about the infinite power of the Almighty Creator and His promise of making Islam triumphant in the following words: "It is He who has sent His prophet with the guidance and the religion of truth, that He may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheist should be averse." No wonder Islam is the world's fastest growing religion today, and in a vain bid to prevent to tarnish its image, some blasphemous disbelievers supported by irreligious regimes are burning copies of the Noble Quran, but to no avail. This is all because of the fact that the Prophet was not just the most excellent exemplar to mankind in manners, behavior, etiquette, patience, piety, bravery, worship, wisdom, and practical behavior in society, but he also gave to the world his immaculate progeny, who, in every age and era, offered sacrifices for the sake of truth in order to defeat falsehood. Condolences again on the passing away of the Messenger of Mercy, and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Iran's leader, addressing thousands of people from the provinces of Sistan and Balochistan and South Khorasan. He also said the U.S. and Europe do not have the same powers as before and are declining. The leader may be referring to the rise of powerful blocs like BRICS or the SCO. BRICS in particular has just recently expanded from its current 5 members to include new members like Iran and Saudi Arabia. And here's a map of the world outlining BRICS countries. It is pretty obvious how the U.S. and Europe are the minority. U.S. intervention in other countries' affairs, whether through wars, regime change, or economic sanctions, has led to the polarization of the world. The leader called the U.S. failure in Syria and the humiliating escape from Afghanistan two obvious examples of the decline of American power. It's a toss-up between which of these two failures were more humiliating. Right now, the U.S. is occupying Syria, looting the country from its oil, and selling it to provide for its troops there, and by many accounts, to support the terrorists in northern Syria. That is a low for any country. A big slap in the face to France and colonialism. From Mali to Niger to Gabon, African countries are rising against the colonial country France, which has held these countries captive economically. But the people of these countries have now risen, saying that enough is enough. Iran's leader has said you hear these days how the African countries that were under the influence of France are rising against it one after another. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader stated that Washington is working on ethnic and sectarian fault lines in Iran with the aim of creating a crisis in the country. Some of the areas that he outlined, called crisis points, are ethnic differences, religious differences, and the issue of gender and women. But this is something that the U.S. has executed for quite some time. Back in the year 2007, it was revealed that the CIA was funding ethnic separatist groups to create instability in Iran. These incidents were carried out by the Kurds in the west, the Azeris in the northwest, the Ahwazi Arabs in the southwest, and the Baluchis in the southeast. The incidents included bombing and assassination campaigns against Iranian soldiers and government officials. There was also the Iran Freedom Support, an act of Congress approved by the former U.S. President George W. Bush that appropriated millions of dollars to spend money in support of groups opposed to the Iranian government. Iran's leader statements have come at a time when there is an intense campaign to turn the unfortunate passing away of Mahsa Amini's one-year anniversary into a violent one.
The commission is the premier UN body for promoting gender equality and empowering women. It cannot do its important work if it's being undermined from within. Iran's membership at this moment is an ugly stain on the commission's credibility.
One member, a bullying member, notorious for disobeying the UN Charter and international law, intend to pursue its unlawful request to remove an elected member from the commission only on the basis of unfounded claims and fabricated arguments.
The crisis in Niger is deepening further as junta leaders accuse France of deploying forces in the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, as part of preparations for a potential military intervention following the coup on July 26.
It should be pointed out to national and international public opinion that since the announcement of this withdrawal plan, France has continued to deploy its forces in several ECOWAS countries as part of the preparations for an aggression against Niger that is planning in collaboration with this community organization.
The junta says France has deployed military aircraft and armored vehicles in multiple countries for such aggressive actions.
100 or so rotations of military cargo planes unloaded large quantities of war material and equipment in Senegal, Ivory Coast, and Benin, to name but a few. The CNSP and the transitional government denounce and castigate this lack of sincerity. These underhand delaying tactics are designed to dull the patriotism patriotic ardor of the Niger people in their fight for the total withdrawal of French troops from Niger in order to achieve a more successful military intervention against our country.
The statement prompted an immediate response from Paris. French President Emmanuel Macron stated that he would only take action upon the request of the deposed Nigerian leader Mohamed Bazoum.
If we redeploy anything, it'll only be at the demand of Bazoum and in coordination with him, not with those people who are holding a president hostage.
President Macron emphasized that France fully supports the position of ECOWAS, which has stated that military intervention is being considered as an option to reinstate Bazoum as president. Relations between Niger and its former colonizer, France, have deteriorated since Paris deemed the junta illegitimate. In the meantime, anti-French sentiment has been growing in Niger, with thousands of people regularly gathering in the capital, Niamey, to demand the withdrawal of French forces and its ambassador from the country. The developments in Niger come as people across the West African nation have been demanding withdrawal of French troops since the military junta took power following the July coup. This has sparked a call from the junta for Nigerians to persist until the complete expulsion of French forces.
This is why the National Council for the Protection of the Fatherland and the transitional government launch a solemn appeal to the great people of Niger to be vigilant and never to demobilize until the inevitable departure of French troops from our territory.
However, it is worth noting that Niger is not the sole country where anti-French sentiment has been prevalent. A glance at recent political changes and military coups in Africa, particularly across the Sahel region, suggests that public demands for the departure of French forces have played a significant role in triggering these military takeovers. Testimonies to this trend can be observed in Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, and the most recent case in Niger. In Niger's context, the country has been grappling with growing insecurity exacerbated by political instability and armed insurgencies. Moreover, despite being a resource-rich nation with a population of 26 million, Niger is considered one of the poorest countries on Earth, according to UN figures. Given the extensive involvement of France in Niger, both politically and economically, the general public there attributes many of their grievances to Paris. One may wonder why Niger has long been easy prey for Paris. Niger boasts strategic mineral reserves, including uranium, gold, and crude oil, among others. Notably, France holds mineral rights for uranium mining, which fuels its nuclear power plants. Consequently, Paris heavily relies on Niger's uranium mines. This has led Nigerians to perceive their country as a victim of French exploitation, with their resources being undervalued. Recognizing that other Sahelian countries may face a similar fate, African people are awakening to the reality that Western powers, particularly France, have maintained their presence primarily to exploit their resources. This realization has prompted Nigerians and other West African nations to assert that the era of colonialism is over, and they themselves must put an end to decades of Western occupation and economic exploitation in their countries. A recent visit by a U.S. delegation led by Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Ethan A. Gorish to northeastern Syria has drawn outrage from Damascus. In a statement, the Syrian Foreign Ministry branded the entry of the delegation to the country's territory as unauthorized. The ministry categorically condemned the visit as what it called flagrant violations of Syria's sovereignty and a breach of international law and the United Nations Security Council resolutions. That after the delegation, led by Gorish and a military officer, met with commanders of U.S.-backed militant groups, including Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, and tribal leaders earlier in September in the eastern province of Deir ez-Zor. The ministry said the delegation's meeting further exacerbated concerns regarding Syria's sovereignty and international legal principles. The ministry dismissed the delegation's claim that their visit was aimed at addressing issues faced by residents in Deir ez-Zor, calling it a blatant lie. It said the event underscores the hypocritical stance taken by U.S. administration. The Syrian Foreign Ministry stressed that the U.S. is actively exploiting Syria's resources and capabilities while at the same time imposing unilateral economic sanctions, describing the measures as unjust, illegitimate, inhumane, and immoral. The ministry asserted that the U.S.'s blatant interference in Syria's domestic affairs, along with its extensive support for various terrorist groups and separatist militias, only serves to underline the destructive role played by Washington in the Arab country. The reaction by the Syrian government comes as U.S.-backed militant groups hold control to the east of the Euphrates River, while the Syrian government forces are positioned on the western bank. The United States also maintains military installations in the area, including the country's largest gas field, Alomar. The visit led by Goldrich and a U.S. Army officer to Syria follows another trip by an American delegation to the country's northwest last month. The high-level delegation included three members of the U.S. Congress, Ben Klein, Scott Fitzgerald, and French Hill, all members of the U.S. Republican Party, who visited parts of Aleppo province with a claim of highlighting the ongoing humanitarian catastrophe there. But the interesting point about U.S. delegations' recent trips is that all those visits were made to areas controlled by foreign-backed terrorists and not ordinary areas. The recent visits also come in the light of Washington's all-out support for foreign-backed militants there. For over a decade, the United States has left no stone unturned to provide financial and logistical support to the terrorists, including Daesh, with the aim of overthrowing the democratically elected president of Syria. Reports on the ground indicate that the United States has recently increased its support for the terrorist groups in parts of Syria controlled by foreign-backed militants. Testimony to that is the deadly terror attacks carried out by Daesh over the past months. The most recent incident occurred on August 10th when Daesh terrorists ambushed a bus in Deir ez-Zor province, resulting in the tragic loss of 32 Syrian soldiers. Concurrently, despite the existence of U.S. coalition-controlled camps in Syria, particularly Al-Hawl camp in Hasakah province, which functions as a primary detention and holding facility for Daesh terrorists, the activities of the terror group have surged. Some Lebanese media have cited Russian officials that the U.S. support for Daesh terrorists in certain areas in Syria has significantly increased. Maybe that is why the Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, has talked of U.S. plans to revive Daesh in an effort to justify its role in the West Asia region. All what it is that U.S. intentions to provide as much support to the terrorists as it can are not secret to anyone. But the real intention is, as the Syrian government has numerously complained about, to plunder the country's resources, including its oil and gas reserves.
A recent video circulating on social media shows Israeli soldiers of the Army's Golani Brigade rioting during a training session in protest against the far-right Israeli cabinet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's recent controversial policies. The leaked video shows dozens of soldiers from Israel's Golani Brigade shouting and vandalizing property. According to the reports, several of the protest participants had been disciplined by superiors, resulting in the arrest of several soldiers, including sergeants. The regime's Golani Brigade is mostly made up of elite soldiers specialized in ground warfare. They have carried out armed attacks against Palestinians and have participated in almost all the wars waged by the regime. Ever since the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced the proposal for the judicial overhaul, which limits the authority of the national judiciary, the public has held mass demonstrations across Israel. Tens of thousands of military personnel from different sectors of the Israeli army have protested against the decision, including 10,000 reservists from intelligence units and Air Force pilots. They have threatened to no longer show up for duty in protest of Netanyahu's judicial reform efforts. Last month, Israel's Air Force chief suspended a number of senior military reserve forces in the wake of ongoing demonstrations against Netanyahu's judicial overhaul plan. The development came a day after the Israeli Navy suspended two high-ranking reservists after they announced plans to end volunteer reserve duties, in addition to refusing to serve in what they called a dictatorship. Also, cases of suicide within the Israeli occupation forces have grabbed headlines recently, with observers blaming a mental health epidemic among soldiers. In July, Israel's Chief of Staff, General Herzi Halevi, warned that the army's unity has dangerously deteriorated due to the thousands of reservists who have threatened to hold service in protest against the judicial overhaul Israel faces. He also warned that Israel would be in existential peril. Some other Israeli military officials have warned that the reservists' protests are impacting military readiness amid heightened tension between Israel and the axis of resistance, including Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Hamas in recent months. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his supporters have rejected the reservists' protests as a dangerous and unprecedented form of political blackmail by the military, with some equating the protests to attempts at a military coup. Despite the threat of reservists refusing service, Netanyahu's far-right cabinet pushed ahead with the judicial overhaul legislation. The Knesset passed the legislation in a vote in July, despite months of large protests. The legislation struck down the ability of Israel's Supreme Court to veto legislation passed by the Knesset based on the criteria of reasonableness.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions in Practical Tajweed Rules held by IRB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. So I really, really welcome you all, and also our brothers here, Brother Ali Nasir and Hussein Ruhullah, Hassan Nasrullah and Fawad Haider. All right, without wasting the time, inshallah, we'll go on and continue to Surah Ali Imran. Ayah 118 will be our today's topic. So we'll talk about this ayah shortly. We'll mention some points. Then inshallah the tajweed rules and the recitation will practice. Alright? Let's listen everybody.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu la tattakhidhu bitanatan min dunikum la ya'lunakum khabala. وَدُّوا مَا عَنِتُّمْ قَدْ بَدَتِ الْبَغْضَاءُ مِنْ أَفْوَاهِهِمْ وَمَا تُخْفِي صُدُورُهُمْ أَكْبَرُ قَدْ بَيَّنَّا لَكُمُ الْآيَاتِ إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْقِلُونَ.
Great recitation, alhamdulillah. So, make sure brothers and sisters who are listening to IRB English Radio right now, stay with us inshallah at the end of this session after we mentioned
the important tajweed rules, we'll practice the recitation as well. So stay with us till the end of this session. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. Allah Almighty in Surah Ali Imran in Ayah 118 on page 65 says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا O you who have faith, لَا تَتَّخِذُوا بِطَانَةً مِّن دُونِكُمْ Do not take your confidence from others than yourselves. Do not take your best friends, close friends, or secret friends from others than yourselves. لا يألونكم خبالا ودوا ما عنتم. They will spare nothing to ruin you. They are eager to see you in distress, in problem, in trouble. قَدْ بَدَتِ الْبَغْضَاءُ مِنْ أَفْوَاهِهِمْ Hatred has already shown itself from their mouths, from their sayings. وَمَا تُخْفِي صُدُورُهُمْ أَكْبَرُ And what their breasts, their chests, hide within it, yet worse. It is worse than what they say. قَدْ بَيَّنَّا لَكُمُ الْآيَاتِ We have certainly made the signs clear for you. We have told you everything about your enemies. So there is no excuse for you. إِن كُنتُمْ تَعْقِلُونَ Should you apply reason if you are reasoning. Right? Guys, in this ayah, Allah Almighty warns us of many important points. First, about the enemies and friends. Which type of people, which groups of people we have to take as friends, close friends, we should share our secrets with them, which type of people we should not. Remember, it's very clear. If we, God forbid, have enemies, that nowadays we have enemies. So, guys, in the early Islam, there were some Muslims, okay, who were sharing like their secrets with Jewish people, right? So, and also, so Allah Almighty told them, reveal this ayah that do not take others' friends. If you have mu'min brothers, okay, your mu'min brothers should be your friends. Why? Because those Jews, okay, they were showing, for example, love, friendship to this kind of Muslims, okay, and in return, okay, what did they want in reality? They were asking for the plans of Muslims, that what is the Prophet going to do in the war? So Allah Almighty warns them, don't do this. Do not share your secrets with them. They will not be helpful. They will not care about you, okay? Okay? So, that's it. And also, Allah Almighty says, لَا يَأَلُونَكُمْ خَبَالًا, okay? They will not back down. They will not back down. Don't look at them. Apparently, they smile at you. Okay? There is something in their heart. Alright? So, that's it. In kuntum ta'qilun, Allah Almighty says, if you apply reasoning, okay, you will understand these things. Right? So, that's it. Guys, refer to the tafsir books, okay? The explanations will be are given there, okay? Inshallah, you can learn more. And also, our scholars have talked about these kind of issues a lot, okay? May Allah Almighty protect us from all these kind of plots. All right? So yes.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا
القرآن Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
It's time for us to mention the important tajweed rules. Ali Nasir, Hussein and Hassan and Fawad. Ready inshallah?
Yes.
Alright, let's go. So in Ayah 118, the first important rule that our brothers and sisters also have to remember as they are listening. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu. Ya, the mad is not wajib, but you can stretch it. يا أيها الذين آمنوا or you can skip it. يا أيها الذين آمنوا. If you skip it, okay, read the long vowel, yeah, two counts, but the mat don't read it, okay? That's it. لَذِينَ ذَلْ آمَنُوا هَمْزَ لَا تَتَّخِذُوا بِطَانَةً بِطَانَة means, if you look at the dictionary, okay, search it in the dictionary, it says underwear. بِطَانَة underwear, okay? It comes from the word batan. Batan means your belly. Your belly. It tells you this, your underwears, for example. Your underwears are so close to you, yes? To your body. So it talks about this, like, do not take your enemies as your friends. Close friends, like your underwears. Okay, so close at you. Right?
Yes.
But explanation is this way, okay? That don't make them close friends to you, okay? Do not have a relationship like that. Remember, even if you have a relationship with them, okay? Remember, they have plots against you. So, بطانه. طا has a heavy sound. طا. بطانه. تم. تنوين plus ميم. ميم. Matches.
إدغام.
إدغام. يرملون letters. And the rule إدغام is applied. So, merge them. بطانه. تم. من دونكم. مِن نون ساكن plus دال دال matches إخفاء إخفاء is hiding the sound مِن دونكم لا يألونكم خبالو right خبالا changes to خبالو am I right حسن خبالو تنوين plus واو merge them إدغام
yes.
خبالو ولا sorry خبالو ودو ما عنتم قاد قاد right
قلقلة
قل قل. Bounce the sound echoing sound قاد بدت البغضاء ضاد has a heavy sound بغضاء من بغضاء the mat is واجب right
yes
حمزة and ألف both are in the same
yes
من أفواههم no changes to the نون نون ساكن clear to read it حمزة is there من أفواههم وما تخفي صدورهم أكبر أكبر را has a heavy sound when you stop here حسن what does that jim say
it's just to stop or continue
it says it's just to stop or continue good job thank you so much قد again إقلقلة yes بينا لكم الآيات صلاة tells you حسين
better to continue
better to continue good job إن
إخفاء
إخفاء كن
إخفاء
إخفاء hide the sound of نون إن كنتم تعقلون right so now we mentioned do you have any questions Any other tajweed rules here?
No, sir.
So let's practice the recitation. Brothers and sisters, now it's time to practice the recitation of this ayah. Stay with us, okay? Let's continue. I'll recite. Make sure, inshallah, you repeat after me. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تتخذوا بطانة من دونكم
يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تتخذوا بطانة من دونكم
لا تتخذوا بطانة من دونكم لا يألونكم خبالا ودوا ما عنتم
لا تتخذوا بطانة من دون دونكم لا يألونكم خبالا ودوا ما عنتم
قد بدت البغضاء من أفواههم وما تخفي صدورهم أكبر
قد بدت البغضاء من أفواههم وما تخفي صدورهم أكبر
قد بينا لكم الآيات
قد بينا لكم الآيات
نون مشدد if you see there okay نون مشدد قد بينا لكم الآيات
قد بينا لكم الآيات
Good job, ما شاء الله إن كنتم تعقلون
إن كنتم تعقلون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
أحسنتم ما شاء الله الله bless you inshallah that's it from us for today brothers and sisters thank you so much for being with us and listening to IRB English Radio inshallah in the coming sessions we'll continue and with the rest of the verses of Surah Ali Imran stay with IRB English Radio thanks to Fawad Hassan Hussein Ali Nasser for being with us as Fawad is pointing at me to give him a thanks I really give you a thanks, okay, Fawad? Thank you so much. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
thousands of people remain missing.